Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Futures are weak as the headwinds this morning include record new COVID cases for three straight days, including some in the vice president's office. Stimulus hopes remain thin. It is the busiest week of earnings season. We're going to delve into that. In the meantime, our roadmap begins with COVID fears and stimulus stalemate. Stocks are set to open sharply lower as infections jump to new records.
Plus, SAP is on track for its worst trading day in 12 years. The German enterprise software giant slashing its revenue forecast and warning of ongoing COVID lockdown headwinds for its business. And, of course, the race for a cure. Drug maker AstraZeneca says its coronavirus vaccine triggers an immune response amongst both older and younger adults. Carl.
David, we'll begin with that SAP story, I guess, Jim, and start asking ourselves whether that is something that is uniquely European or something bigger, especially for mega cap tech.
I'm very much struggling with what SAP had, the reasons for its very dismal outlook. Taking it back a couple of years, frankly, you could argue that this stock is still too high at these prices, which is down substantially, down 20%. They're talking about a cloud slowdown. Can we just understand that cloud has accelerated every business that is in its space except for SAP? Now, it's very possible that when you upload an SAP program into the public cloud, SAP does far less for you. Remember, you can't, there's someone who facilitates going from the private to the public. You know something? I got to tell you, Carl, this one stinks. I mean, I had the previous, it does. I had the previous CEO on. There was a co-CEO, Ms. Morgan. And do you know that she, 3 weeks after she was on, she was no longer the co-CEO. The management turmoil here ever since Bill McDermott, who is now at ServiceNow, is disconcerting. So I find their reasons for their decline quizzical. And if you think that they are truly, truly an arbinger of a decline for cloud, I can challenge that directly. I just don't think they stand for anything other than an inability to convert. I think that their reasons are really specific to SAP and not the broader brush that they're painting. 117, it deserves to be down that low. It really truly does.
Well, Jim, you're answering the question that many people are asking this morning, at least you're, with your sense of it, which is it in some way indicative of a broader slowdown and therefore going to impact other companies, or is it specific to SAP? You clearly have just indicated you believe it is specific to SAP,
reflective
of something that the market needs to take a greater account of. They were citing muted revenue. By the way, the call just began.
Right.
It's a European company, but the call just began 9 a.m. So we may get more off of there, although we did have an interview on CNBC Europe with the CEO already. And we can sort of, in fact, let's take a listen, guys, to what Mr. Klein had to say in terms of where his focus is. Despite what, again, is this near-term guidance that is not particularly good, both on revenues and on margins.
As the CEO of SAP, I have to be focused on the long-term value creation of this company. So I cannot trade the success of our customers and the significant revenue potential of SAP against short-term margin optimization.
So, Jim, margins also going to be under pressure here.
Look, a lot of what they're talking about is giant pushouts. I mean, numbers, they're looking about things being pushed out dramatically, 2023 to 2025. Remember, they bought Concur for $8 billion in 2014. That happened to be a very good company. What do? They keep track of your T and E. Well, what business has slowed dramatically? T and E. I also think that, you know, they're spinning off Qualtrics. That's been very, very quizzical. I don't understand what happened with this co-CEO to CEO management turmoil. I also don't understand why they didn't, they certainly didn't signal this whatsoever. I think they had ample opportunity to signal it, and they didn't do it. That's one of the reasons that we're overwhelmed by this morning. But to me, this is not just share loss, but it is an inability to be able to make a client who moves up to public cloud give them as much money. So in many ways, they sowed their seed to their own destruction. And I use the word destruction not lightly. This was a truly terrible quarter, but I do think it was intrinsic to them, because how many companies have we had on air which just said that, you know what, the pandemic has accelerated digitization, say, from 3 months or 2 years down from 10 years. David, the digitization thesis, which is that the cloud combined with the pandemic has just been a boon, does not ring true with SAP.
Right.
But it does ring true with every other, including Oracle, obviously Salesforce.
Yep.
I just don't get it. And yep. To me, I'm not saying they're losing share because they've kept their core clients. I am saying that when they move them up, it's not as lucrative as other companies when they move them up. You know, SAP moves up the hand.
Move them up. You know, you should explain to people what you mean by that.
Well, you know, what happens is you get a situation where you have a company that's on premises.
Yep.
And they move up. Which makes sense,
right.
To the public cloud.
Right.
Once they're at the public cloud, they can work with HANA, which is the analytic system that SAP has. But most companies that move up to cloud, you know, what do they use? They use Snowflake.
Right.
And so Snowflake is considered...
Or what is a burgeoning group of other data analytics companies and software that they can use, Jim, which
right.
are companies we talk about all the time, which goes back to this idea of the acceleration of companies moving to the cloud and then the opportunity that is there for the likes of Snowflake.
Right. So Carl, what this says is I think it's a false tale. I mean, I came in here today and I've been working on this stupid thing since 3:30. If only just looking at the futures, the futures okay, and then SAP makes everything fall apart. But I thought the market should have focused on Dunkin' Donuts, because here's been a red hot stock doing incredibly well and then gets a bid anyway. I mean, holy cow. I mean, if we just focus on Dunkin', what does it say about so many of our stocks that have actually been doing well? Matthew Boss this morning talking about VF Corp, talking about PVH doing much better. I see a Contour upgrade from sell to buy. The whole process of being casual at home, another positive thesis. So
yep.
I'm seeing too much good, not enough bad to let SAP color this morning.
Yeah. JPM adds Lulu to the focus list this morning as well, Jim. It sounds like you're saying, you know, historically we've talked about retailers using weather as an excuse for bad execution. It almost sounds like you think SAP's doing that by a magnitude of X.
Yes, perfectly. And I don't understand what happened. I had Ms. Morgan, co-CEO, on not that long ago on Mad Money, and she was very, very strong and gave a terrific outlook and was really positive and talked unbelievably well about the future of SAP. And David, 3 weeks later, she was gone.
Yeah.
It was almost like it was Stalin. You know, it was like she was doing really great stuff and she was next to Stalin. And in the next picture, she was white out, right? They just whited her out. They photoshopped.
Not easy being on that Politburo. Yeah, you got to be careful.
Right.
On that balcony there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jim, you mentioned Duncan, and we just saw the stock is up sharply, to your point. Not sure we're going to get a deal announcement today. New York Times breaking the story over the weekend. Most likely tomorrow, but soon. And it does appear likely. Inspire Brands, they're going to be the buyer here. Remember, they bought Sonic, they own Arby's. Buffalo Wild Wings, which used to be one of your favorites. You know, who knows at some point if they do succeed in buying this. But to your point, it's a significant premium. Talk as much as a 20% premium over a stock. Take a look at what this has done over the last 6 months. This hit the lows in March, and then it's just been springboarded unexpectedly, I guess, in some ways, because you'd think fewer people, again, sort of not as many office workers, things like that. But Jim, they have benefited from this current environment, shifted working patterns, but customers have been coming to their stores later in the day, perhaps not as early as usual, but coming they have been.
It's done remarkably well. Now, Starbucks reports this week. One could argue that Starbucks United States has not been as good as Dunkin'. I have seen a lot of people be short Dunkin' versus being long Starbucks because Starbucks has lagged. David, another time that perhaps... hedge funds have been too cute.
Yep. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, Dunkin' has been on such a roll.
Yeah.
And yet we don't really think that they're doing as well as Starbucks. So go long Starbucks, go short Dunkin'. Dunkin' has been so strong. Now, Dunkin' is just, Donkey got the bid.
Yeah, they got the bid. All cash is obviously what it's going to be. So it's not like you're going to get an opportunity to participate in the upside here.
Right.
Some combination. But at the same time, you're going to get a premium over the crazy highs, right? Recent highs.
Well, that's, yeah,
and the multiple to EBITDA is a very high one if they, again, get this thing done at the 106, 107 level that's being discussed, was discussed in the New York Times story.
But this would be a case, Carl, if you really felt that there was no, let's say, that there was a slowdown in COVID. This makes so much sense. I'm not getting that. Anyone in the world who thinks there's a slowdown in COVID, say you should go buy something like Dunkin' Brands, we should have their head examined. But they do have a great record of buying things inexpensively. This is certainly violative of their charter, so to speak. But wow, I mean, maybe this takeout of coffee is going to come back. Maybe we've got these companies that can bring coffee to your office again. It's just that there's no office. That's what's so confusing about this.
I mean, I imagine, Jim, you'd agree that it's not a story about the denominator. The pie is not getting larger, at least at the moment. It's more about the top number, and that is the share they've stolen from businesses that have gone, that have closed, and you know that story too well.
Well, you know what? That is really such a great analysis, Carl. And I know that one of the reasons why people hang in Starbucks, there's a positive piece today about Starbucks, is they're expanding where stores are closing. If you don't think there's enough Dunkin' Donuts, you can go in and get really favorable lease agreements because people want a Dunkin' Donuts in wherever they are and what real estate investment trust there is. So I think you're right. I mean, one of the things that's been this theme is that if you're a survivor, and this is Chipotle too, David, what you're getting, if you're a survivor,
yes,
you're able to go to any real estate investment trust and say, we want a deal because the real estate investment trust want traffic. And Dunkin' Donuts provides the traffic.
And they are in a good position. When you have leverage like that, you may want to push it and actually use it to your advantage. And perhaps they're in a position to do that.
Do you know anything about them, David?
Do I know anything about them?
Yeah, about where they're... That's a lot of money that they have. Is that...
You're talking about Inspire, which is work.
Yes.
I know a bit. Atlanta-based.
They changed their name. Why did they change their name? What was this about?
Well, no, Inspire Brands is the group of companies they've already acquired, but Capital is the private equity firm behind that, Atlanta-based.
Look at that list.
Large and has grown dramatically. They obviously have had a strategy in rolling up many of these brands. You see them right there. Dunkin' is, I think, equal to... All of those combined are not far off, Jim. But if you add it in, one would anticipate, if I were just thinking as a private equity guy, that at some point you'd want to start monetizing. So you add it in. You talk about all the different synergies between all your different brands and your buying power and who knows what else and your management acumen and how smart they are. And, I can go through a whole list and be here all day. But then you take it public, right?
Yeah, but look at the possibility that Darden gets a cheesecake has come back. Last week, Dave and Buster's was able to do a bond deal.
Yeah.
Carl, we had a collapse in retail in this country, a collapse in companies like Dunkin' Brands. But as you say, what's happened is the strong are not only surviving, but they're thriving because the weak are so weak that they've vanished. All the mom-and-pop coffee shops have not been able to sustain themselves, and there's no stimulus to keep them around. So literally what I see a lot of places doing is going to their landlords and say, here's the keys. And an environment call where it says, here's the keys, I want to own Dunkin' Brands.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a man. What a double-edged story. As the strong get stronger and stimulus remains empty hopes, at least if you listen to Kudlow this morning, arguing the talks have not gone away, but definitely are slowing down. Guys, we'll take a break. We're going to dig into earnings season. As we said, it's going to be a really busy one this week. A lot of initiations of Palantir, pretty interesting. We're hoping for some news of any kind on vaccines this week. All that and more as futures are weak. We're back in a minute.
We're not going to control the pandemic. We are going to control the fact that we get vaccines, therapeutics, and other mitigation.
Why aren't we going to get control of the pandemic?
Because it is a contagious virus, just like the flu.
Yeah, that's the White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows on CNN yesterday talking about handling the pandemic. In the meantime, AZN and J&J have gotten permission to resume their Phase 3 trials. We're waiting to see if Pfizer says anything this week. Meg Terrell wraps up all of this morning. Hey, Meg.
Hey, Carl. Well, it could be a very big week for vaccines, but we're just going to have to wait to see. Meanwhile, J&J and AstraZeneca on Friday both getting the go-ahead to resume their phase 3 vaccine trials, both of which had been paused as they investigated safety events. Now, J&J saying there's no evidence that the vaccine caused the event, and they're not even giving any information about what the event was or whether the person was on the placebo or on the vaccine. AstraZeneca says that the FDA concluded it's safe to resume that trial after a patient experienced a neurological event in this study. Now, I spoke on Friday with J&J's chief scientific officer, Dr. Paul Stoffels, who said he hopes there won't be a major delay from this, and he expects still to potentially see data, they hope, by the end of this year, potentially early next year. AstraZeneca saying the same thing about the timing for potential data. Now, some news out this morning also, some reporting from the Financial Times that there is some data in older patients with the AstraZeneca vaccine, saying essentially that it elicited the same immune response in older people as it did in younger people that they were testing this vaccine in. AstraZeneca giving us a statement saying it's encouraging to see immunogenicity responses were similar between older and younger adults, and that reactogenicity, that's the sort of side effects you can sometimes get when you get the vaccine, they say that was lower in older adults where the COVID-19 disease severity is higher. They say these results further build the body of evidence for the safety and immunogenicity of AstraZeneca 1222. Now, we are expecting potentially to see data from Pfizer this week from its phase 3 trial, but that depends on a lot of things, including the rate of infection in the trial and, guys, how well this vaccine works. So we're going to wait to see.
Meg, two things. One, did the administration ever correct the president's, boastful comment during the last debate about J&J is the closest to finishing, given the fact that they were on hiatus? And second, where are we, the president is also touting the Regeneron, where are we going to be able to get more of the Regeneron therapeutic product, and how limited is that, given the fact that what we're having is a decline in death, big increase in caseload? Regeneron could really be the key company at this moment.
Yeah, it's going to be limited for that antibody drug. Regeneron says, you know, right now they have about 50,000 doses, and that's enough for 50,000 people if they got the emergency use authorization now. And they expect to bring that up to 300,000 within the next few months, given the number of people being diagnosed daily with COVID-19. Both Regeneron and Eli Lilly, which is also waiting for emergency use authorization, say they expect to have to ration these drugs. Decisions will have to be made about who gets them. So both of them are waiting for the FDA's green light to get that emergency use authorization. Meanwhile, I agree with you, Jim. It was curious. The president noted J&J first when asked about vaccines in the debate, given it was still on pause. Now it's off pause, but they are a little bit further behind in terms of testing the vaccine.
Meg, will there be a kind of a kidney list and a heart list for Regeneron? Will there be a waiting list? Mm-hmm. It can't obviously just be arbitrary and capricious, can it?
No, you'd expect that there will be prioritization made in terms of, you know, which patients are considered right for this drug. You know, one of the interesting things that Regeneron did in testing it was to actually separate patients based on whether they generated their own antibodies in response to the virus before they administered them their antibodies. And of course, that was the situation with the president. And they found people who didn't mount their own immune response actually responded better to the drug. And if we have the capacity to test people in that way, that could be a way of making sure the people who would really benefit the most get the drug.
Hey, Meg, really quick, on Pfizer, Bernstein's out this morning saying, look, Pfizer said it would be October when we get some numbers. It's the last week. In their words, should we be worried, perhaps, that that the interim may have missed? I mean, how worried do you think we should be?
You know, companies give us months in terms of time frames, and we're still in October. And so I was a little surprised that Bernstein was saying we're already later than they expected. We just don't know when Pfizer was taking looks at the data to know whether we're at the first look or the second look, which does have implications for how well the vaccine works. So we could see this week some data, but we don't know yet. So it's going to be very interesting to watch.
Yep. Yep, one of the other big waiting games that we're playing here. Meg, thanks. We'll talk to you soon. Meg Terrell wrapping up so much news on the medical front. Futures, as we said, are weak, and we're going to see how the opening bell shapes up in about 9 minutes.
That's let's get to a mad dash. It was a countdown to the opening bell. We got about 2.5 minutes before we get started with trading here. We haven't talked that much about the broader market today, although Apple in some ways, Jim, is reflective of the broader market given its $2 trillion market cap.
Well, you know, one of my favorite movies, David, was Terminator 2, Judgment Day. October 29th is Judgment Day. We've got Facebook, we have Amazon, we have Alphabet, and we have Apple. And there are a number of notes that are very positive about Apple. We've got Evercore pounding the table on this super cycle. I never liked the super cycle because that is what we have with coal. Last super cycle didn't work out. J.P. Morgan talked about modest beat. Atlantic goes hold to buy. Now, all of these, I think, Deutsche Bank says sell a quarter. All of these set us up incorrectly because it's really not, I think, in Tim Cook's best interest to raise forecasts on 5G. Even though we know, and David, you are very good at pointing out the different providers and what they're willing to do, Verizon, T-Mobile, app, AT&T, in order to get people to buy this phone.
Yes.
So, but you have to understand that if there are analysts who are saying that Tim Cook's going to give guidance, and they will be therefore disappointed if Tim Cook doesn't. And I don't know why he should. Quizzical to buy it here.
Quizzical to buy it here.
Yeah, I love
quizzical
Apple,
that people would expect guidance given it's a new introduction of an entirely new phone.
Yeah, I mean, and also there's this COVID factor.
Yes.
Which may cause people to buy it at home, but I think that people want to try out a phone. They like to go. They want to see the differences. But it also just because Tim Cook is a wise person. But these people are goading him, I think, into saying, look, here's that we think 5G is great. And you know what? Do you ever know Tim Cook to be able to beat his chest on something that's about to happen as opposed to happened? So I don't understand why these people think Tim Cook is going to break ranks and suddenly start talking about really positive 5G when we've had what? How many days?
I don't know. It was last week, right?
Yeah, it was
last week. What is it? 4 days?
Yeah.
Four days?
I mean, you know, come on. Let's just temper. You know, let's temper things. Let's get things down. I think you own it, don't trade it. But when you have these people set it up, you might want to own it after the airport.
Yeah, I think it's Thursday night, guys.
Yep.
Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, Twitter, Starbucks. It always comes down to one day, and that's going to be it, this Thursday afternoon. There's the opening bell. Obviously, breath a little weak here as we're back to 34-31. Jim, Morgan Stanley this morning, Wilson says, we still like our range of 3,100 to 3,550. And, man, we have lived in there. It feels like forever now.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Costin's note was pretty good, which was don't worry about the capital gains tax. I think there are a lot of people, when you watch Biden, there is a kind of, okay, rich people, you're going to be paying for all the rest of us. And I think that a lot of our viewers are in the you'll be paying for all the rest of us category. So it was good to see Costin come out and say don't equate this with the stock market. You're absolutely right, Wilson positive. I don't know. I mean, I look at this market and think, are you really going to let SAP, which I regard as being dysfunctional right now, determine? Remember, SAP is not run by Bill McDermott anymore. David, Bill McDermott runs ServiceNow, which once again was boosted. I don't know, ServiceNow going like 1,000. And this is the company that is coloring our market. Now, you could say, no, it's no stimulus. Who thinks there's going to be stimulus at this point, other than reporters?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know of anybody who really thinks. I
guess
even Larry Kudlow earlier was sort of becoming a little less optimistic on stimulus. When was he on with us, Carl? He was optimistic last week.
It's hard to pin him down, right?
Yeah.
I know, you know, Jim's been pretty stubbornly negative on the prospect of pre-election fiscal stimulus, Jim. Although Feinstein's out today saying, all right, let's talk about post-election stimulus. Historically, lame ducks don't get a lot done. A lot of members are discouraged or defeated. They don't come back to D.C. So I don't know. Then you're starting to talk about a January, February story.
Yeah, I've been telling people, please don't jump the gun on infrastructure. Stick with the themes that are working. Stick with the idea that travel's getting better. Stick with the idea, there's notes today about housing, that housing remains strong given how low rates are and the continued, when you get COVID like this, you're suddenly in that weird area, Carl, where people say, you know what, I thought people were coming back. they're not coming back. Otis, which reported a very good quarter, which stands for in some way to say office construction, which is pretty strong, is not up. Now, it's very light volume. I think it should be up because it's substantially better than expected. But then there'll be people who say, Carl, this new wave of COVID just makes it even more likely that people are not going to go to the office. And I think that that does create gloom. The gloom is pretty palpable, I think, because of COVID.
It's hard to imagine anybody putting up a new tower in New York City anytime soon.
Right.
It's going to be an awful lot of empty square footage when it comes to office space and a lot of metropolitan areas, although right. others that are going to be benefiting that we talk about as well. It moves somewhere.
Right. I think that I thought there was a false tell last week. We saw the banks go up and I was thinking, wait a second. Maybe people are thinking that there's going to be more construction. I think banks were really going up because rates were going up, and that trade can easily reverse.
No, but Otis is always done. I mean, China, they're still putting a lot of stuff up, aren't they, Jim?
Oh, I spoke with them this morning. China's just spectacular. By the way, not losing any share. And they've also got the new thing that I really like. This is when you get IoT, okay, Internet of Things.
Yes.
You are in the situation where, as Otis is, you can get in the elevator as they do it at Foxwood, and you can say, take me to the 8th floor. And it understands that. And why is that so important? Because there is a belief, a stubborn belief in this country, that when you touch a PIN card, when you put in your code,
yes.
and when you touch an elevator floor, that's really COVID ground zero. As opposed to my coughing in your face, which I regard as COVID.
Yeah, more about airborne than surfaces.
Yes, but people...
From what we've learned, although...
Surfaces remain what people think are the most dangerous.
Really?
Yeah, and I think when you look at what's happening in Italy and Spain, Carl, they're doing curfews because they were back to their old ways. I mean, going to bars.
Yeah, France did 52,000 cases yesterday. The health minister there says they see it going to 100K soon. I don't know if you saw Morgan Stanley's new base case, Jim. I mean, they're arguing baseline 130,000 here by year end, which would, that would be a dark winter no matter whether you believe it or not. And there's a lot of projections that people don't believe, but you would not want to see a world where we are doing 130,000 cases a day.
I don't know what that'll mean for colleges. I think that the colleges, by the way, are very torn because there's a lot of people who are testing positive, but they feel okay. Those could be walking time bombs for those who come home for Thanksgiving. But there's been a lot of lockdowns. If you check the colleges, there was a New York Times has a college list. The last week was just horrendous for almost every college. And I think that a lot of colleges are facing right now the notion of what do we do? How do we send these people home? How do we quarantine these people? Carl, I think it's a national emergency, but...
Really? I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that.
First of all,
I don't know what numbers you're looking at because there's plenty of colleges that are doing fairly well. And there's certainly the idea that you want to actually keep the students there as opposed to let them back in some fashion. Well, although, to your point, a lot of universities and schools are going to be sending people home for Thanksgiving and then saying, don't come back. And they'll conduct finals, for example, remotely and then end and then not begin again, many of them, until late in January or even early February, go without a spring break. But, Jim, it's not uniform.
Well, one of the problems is that we don't really have any sort of system in this country for what to do with colleges. I mean, we've got just some craziness where the colleges really don't know what to do.
Well, they've all undertaken it on their own, and a lot of them have very different protocols. Many are doing quite well, others not as well.
Well, it depends on how many you test. I mean, Carl, do you know when the NFL went to 7-day testing, dramatic reduction in COVID? 7-day testing, mm-hmm. they're able to do 7-day testing. Try to get 7-day testing for the regular person who's not in the NFL. I haven't seemed to be able to do that.
We are doing 1 million tests a day now in this country.
Well, there's 330 million people.
There are, but it's a lot more than we were doing, and it does enable you at least to understand where things are happening and and potentially tamping things down more quickly.
Okay, I think you should go to Dr. Faust, who is the best, I think he's a Harvard doctor, one of the best follows on Twitter, and he has a piece today, yesterday, about universities and coronavirus, an update from Ivory Towers, and he's talking about the University of Michigan announced the imposition of an immediate stay-at-home order for the campus.
Yeah, that was last week, 2 weeks, I know.
Well, no, but I'm saying that they're studying what's happening Look, we're on the same page on this. What we're saying is that there's disorganization, disarray at colleges. Some good, some not
so good. Scott Gottlieb had his editorial yesterday, right? More or less saying masks would help a lot if we had a nationwide
mask. Dr. Fauci said the same thing, this national mask mandate, but there's a person in the White House not in favor of that.
No, that's not going to happen, and you heard Mark Meadows talk about what they can do. Meanwhile, we're still waiting for vaccines and therapeutics as quickly as possible, Carl, to get here. Guys, did want to mention a few other things news-wise. Ant Financial, a company we've talked about a number of times, not coming here, not coming to an exchange near you. It's Hong Kong and Shanghai, but it is going to be the largest initial public offering of all time. We got a lot of details on it. And, of course, this falls into that digital financial industry, if you want to call it that, for lack of a better term, payments and things of that. Of course, this has been going on in China for a decade now. This was once a part of Alibaba. They do own 33% of it, so there is at least a direct. You can take a look at Alibaba shares as the continued increase has gone on in terms of what this company would be worth, and you can see they're valuing it at this point around $313 billion. And Joe Tsai, by the way, you want some? Talk to Joe Tsai. Just like he did in Alibaba, he's going to be running allocations here very carefully in terms of making sure they know exactly who their shareholder base is. Obviously, a good amount of it is going to be in China, but they're also going to be distributing this around the world. Unclear exactly percentages-wise. I'd heard early on it might be 50-50. Perhaps that's tilting now more towards more China, a little more domestic, less international, but still plenty given how much stock they're selling as well, Jim. There had been some talk about them being added to the designated entities list. That doesn't appear to be likely at this point from what I'm hearing. But I know you wouldn't want them to come here.
Right? No.
You're against that.
We're just at a moment where this would be the wrong signal in terms of I think they would be shut down if they tried to apply here. I think Ant is very smart to avoid us, given the fact that this is one of those right now where we're getting a lot of mixed feelings from both candidates. David, both candidates have expressed great displeasure with China on very different issues. It's trade when it comes to President Trump, and it's freedom and civil rights when it comes to Biden. Neither one of them is identified with what I would regard as being a constructive path if you want China relations to go back to the way they were under President Obama.
Yeah, agreed. Carl, interesting story in the Wall Street Journal this weekend that looked closely at the manufacturing sector in this country and whether it has benefited from the tariffs, of course, that have remained and are significant in place with China. 2018 was decent, but overall, not really much movement in terms of actual manufacturing jobs.
Yeah, and now, of course, you got these threats of sanctions against Boeing and Raytheon and Lockheed in retaliation for U.S. arms sales to Taiwan of about almost $2 billion. It's another 9-1 down open. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Hey, Bob.
That's exactly right. 9-1 declining to advancing stocks. And, of course, the cyclical sectors, the ones that are most exposed to reopening, are the weakest. Let's take a look at the sectors as we do every day. There's energy. Oil's been down 2 to 3% this morning in and out. Banks, which, as Jim noted, had a very nice move up in the last couple of weeks, or at least last week, down today. Industrials weak. Techs are sort of hugging what the S&P is doing right now. And more defensive sectors like consumer staples are down, but not nearly as much. As you might expect, the reopening stocks, travel, leisure, and some of the real estate investment trusts like Simon Property Group are on the weak side. That's no surprise. This always happens on these. I want to focus on those European stocks because we're seeing much of Europe down about 2%. You've heard a lot about this SAP story, and what everybody's trying to figure out is, as Jim was noting, exactly how stock specific is this. But if there is a fresh wave of lockdowns, as the company has been saying, is that a much broader story? So then it would not be a company specific story. This matters a lot for us because earnings in the fourth quarter have been improving. I know we're focused on the third quarter, but look at the S&P 500 for the fourth quarter. October 1st, we were expecting the fourth quarter to be down 13.6. Today, a few weeks later, down 12.4. Folks, that's improving. And the reason that's happening is the companies who are reporting the third quarter numbers have been really good, 20% above what people normally expect, what the analysts are expecting, and they're raising the fourth quarter numbers. This story could be in jeopardy if the lockdown, if the implications of the SAP story have broader implications. So you see why the market is generally concerned, because things have been going better. And the bottom line is this reminds us that the earnings improving story and the reopening story is hostage to the COVID story and to a certain extent to the election issue, too, where there's a lot of anxiety. Let me just show you some quick stats on the election here, because people keep asking me, is it going to be better under Democrats or Republicans in the White House? Ned Davis has looked at this going back 120 years. The bottom line is the market goes up no matter who's in office, Democrats or Republicans in the White House. There's several reasons for that. But more important is to ask, what happens if both houses, both the White House and the Congress is under the control of one party? Then it gets a little more interesting, but still the market tends to go up. It does best when Republicans are in the White House and the Congress. And again, this goes back to 1900. Average yearly gains in that situation, 7%. When the Democrats are in the White House and in the Congress, the average gains are about 3%. Okay, that's a difference, but it's still up. When Democrats are in the White House and Republicans are in the Congress, it's right in the middle at 5.2%. What's amazing is no matter where you look, the market still goes up, although there are some differences. Why is that? People ask me all the time, and a lot of conclusions when people have looked at this has been widely studied. The simple answer seems to be the president is just not as influential on the economy as everybody thinks. They are not the emperor. They don't control the entire economy. There are a lot of factors that drive stock returns other than who is in the White House. One of the most important things that experts in this always cite to me is the U.S. is a capitalist society. By and large, the means of production is mostly in control of private hands that make private decisions. We also have a functioning court system where contract disputes between parties, between corporations and individuals can be resolved in a relatively straightforward manner. That might seem obvious to everybody, but that's really critical about why the United States has been a successful economy and indeed a successful country, as a capitalist country and a functioning court system. So as we're debating all of this about the elections and the future of the economy, let's tend to remember that the market goes up because of the nature of the United States economy in general. Guys, back to you.
Amen, Bob. Thank you, Bob Pisani. It's going to be a busy week for central banks around the globe, and we're going to get our first look at Q3 GDP. Let's get to Rick Santelli.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Carl. Q3 GDP is going to be a biggie. To see if we completely neutralize Q2's minus 30-something number or not is critical. And, of course, many will say it's an older number, but I think it gives us a lot more information as to how we're going into the most important quarter of all, the fourth quarter, which can really make up a big difference to get us much closer to pre-COVID levels. The long end, you know, after four or five sessions where rates popped up, we lost that momentum Friday. We're losing it a bit again today. Look at a 2-day of 10s. You can see what I'm talking about. Open it up to a week ago Friday when the whole run started with strong retail sales, and the pattern has broken. And we are completely out of sync right now with what's going on with the German bunds. Look at a month-to-date of 10-year bunds versus 10-year treasuries. The only thing I can say about that chart is we are starting to correlate more towards the upside, but the momentum to the upside in yields is lost in the U.S., and we are seeing that some of the COVID scare that pushed yields down seems to be abating, even though the numbers aren't abating when it comes to what's moving the euro. If we continue to look at what's going on in the foreign exchange side, let's look at that euro from mid-June. And you can see that June and July were very good for the euro currency, very bad for the dollar. But if you really step back, what you see from May 2018 is that we might have lost a lot of that volatility in the last couple of months. We flattened out. But for all practical purposes, we flattened out at levels where the euro really showed some strength back 26 to 28 months ago. Carl, Jim, David, back to you.
All right, Rick, thanks. Rick Santelli. Obvious weakness at the open here. VIX is up almost to 30. All sectors are lower. BlackRock, by the way, just cut treasuries to underweight on what they're calling more stimulus expectations on the likely unified Democratic government. Dow's down 416. Take a look at some of the airlines here, down 3 to 4%, well, 1 to 4%, I guess. Actually, the number of daily passengers has been lower than the week earlier figure for 7 straight days now, according to Bespoke. That's the second longest streak since the pandemic. And in the meantime, American is planning customer tours of the MAX, as well as calls with its pilots in the coming weeks in an effort to boost the public's confidence in the jet safety. American has already said it will fly as early as December, Jim, that Miami-New York route. But it's an interesting case study, air travel, where it's not really a story of restrictions at this point. It's more about just consumer acceptance of the safety in travel.
Boy, it's incredible because, again, they've demonstrated over and over this is the safest place to be if you're going to be inside versus any building. The number of COVID cases on airlines is very, very small. We had Gary Kelly last week talking about it. Now, of course, everybody wears a mask on a plane. So we know that that's a positive. Some people have been saying, Jim, stop talking about masks. Look, it's masks or lockdown. Okay, that's what it is. And you don't want lockdown. Lockdown is very bad for the economy. I do think that we have to talk about Boeing and China, because if you're helping Taiwan, you're on a restricted list of some sort. And Boeing has been, because of some defense work, been helping Taiwan. And Taiwan is far more important than we make it. David, you know, Taiwan Semiconductor is probably the single most important company we have when it comes to the red hot semiconductor industry. And Taiwan Semiconductor is not located in, say, San Francisco any more than someone else is buried in Grant's tomb.
No, it's not. You're right. Taiwan Semi is, as its name would imply, not in the United States. Yes.
Then I'm very worried about it. I'm very worried about it because, again, both candidates have expressed no love for China. Carl, they're still trying to outdo each other when it comes to disliking China, as if America has decided China is just bad acting.
But you're not. Why are you worried? I mean, you're with them. You've certainly been a vocal critic.
Because I don't regard my view on China as having to do with the stock market.
Got it.
Yeah, it's more to do with just geopolitical politics.
Jim, I guess the question is, how do we know where the jawboning stops and real action begins, right? Because this has been going on for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to do with tone. I'm actually, if you're more of a trade hawk and less of a actual, let's say, war hawk, and I don't think anyone's in the White House wants war, but, you know, what I'm talking about is Cold War. There's Cold Warriors, and I think that's the Trump administration. And then there are people who I believe will try to get together in a TPP way. And David, TPP might be a way to be able to make it so that things are more effective without branding America as being some sort of bad actor.
Yeah, yeah. TPP, many people look back on as a real lost opportunity, although it's very much unclear that if Hillary Clinton had won, that it would have happened either, because
right.
The Democrats were opposed to it. It wasn't seemingly going anywhere. But Carl, I don't know how many guests we had on when we were talking about China trade all the time, but went back to TPP is, at least in their opinion, having been an extremely effective way to isolate China. But very much unclear whether we'll ever see that trade deal.
Yeah, yeah. Guys, we're back below 28K on the Dow and back below the 50-day for the first time, really since the beginning of the month. Don't go away. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
October 29th, again, a big day. Also, Twitter reports. Now, why is this important? The amazing numbers that we saw from Pinterest and from Snap, and then the moves. Pinterest up 184% this year. Snap up 164%. Twitter only up 57%. I wonder whether Twitter isn't going to report an unbelievably good number. Stock is down. Might be an opportunity.
Yeah, it's weird too, Jim. I think Wednesday is the Senate hearing on Section 230 with the CEOs, so it's going to be a busy week.
Yeah, you might be an opportunity then if people start freaking out, be able to buy that. Carl, I've got one of the most exciting stories in this market for youthful people is Plug Power. Why? Because it's green hydrogen. That matters. People love that. I've got American Electric Power, obviously not a hydrogen play, but Andy Marsh has excited the Robinhood crowd. I understand Robinhood is on Squawk tomorrow. So Plug may be the way to go.
Jim, pace yourself for this week. We always know it's a crucible.
This is it.
We'll see you tonight.
All right. Thank you.
Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.